Welcome to the Brew Drink Run podcast, brought to you by the only website that promotes brewing your own beer, consuming the best craft beers in the world, and then running off the calories, brewdrinkrun.com.
In the middle of the night, I've been walking in my sleep. Welcome to yet another episode of the Brew, Drink, Run podcast. My name is Lee.
Me llamo Keith.
God, I'm Raymond.
Oh, boy. Episode 158 here is our big show. If you like it, please rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you grab your podcast to write a short review. Ratings and reviews help people to find the show. Tell a friend. Post about it on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. If you do that, tag us at Brew, Drink, Run so we know you're talking about us. This is our big show where we do talk about running and home brewing and, of course, beer. We're starting off with one. Keith, what is it?
We have Against the Grain Brewery's Citra Ass Down.
Stop the language.
Hey, I'm just reading the can, man.
Hush your mouth, Keith.
I'm just talking about Citra Ass Down. It's a double IPA, double India Pale Ale here, brewed with Citra hops. 8.2%. Got a nice 16-ounce can here of beer from the Louisville brewery. So there you have it.
Like Against the Grain a lot. They're a brewery that does some really interesting things. I get the feeling that they kind of do what they want to do.
I agree with that. I think I generally am impressed with what they do. I think sometimes I get a mixed bag, but it's out of respect because I feel like they are kind of thinking way outside the box at times. And so I give them a little bit of leeway. You know, I think breweries that want to push the limits of things, they get a little bit of a pass when I personally don't like something. It doesn't make me go, I think I'm going to stop buying their goods. So I like the fact that we're seeing all these 16-ounce cans, too. Been just like bombers and mid-size bottles from them for the most part. So I really like seeing the 16-ounce four-packs of beers that I've had before and enjoyed. I can kind of just pick up and stock the fridge a little.
The 16-ounce can, the Nonic Pint, is kind of a sweet spot for me. I do like having that option sometimes of being able to have a full 16 ounces,
absolutely,
just a little bit more. And it does make it super easy to split, too. I mean, easier to split. I mean,
eight ounces
is more than enough to be able to really kind of get into something and enjoy it. 12 sometimes, it's
yeah, you know, 8 ounces is probably right there at the limit, I think, of where you can really kind of get into a beer and know what's going on. In a case like today where we're, you know, doing a couple of beers, we need to, 16 ounces is better, whereas usually if we have 12-ounce bottles, we'll end up opening two and end up consuming maybe a little more than we need to, during the show. So I think it's a good size. It's a great size just for if you're having one beer, you know. I mean, that's a pint. So,
Raymond, it's a good-looking can from across the table. What are your thoughts?
You know what? All of the Against the Grain cans or label art are a lot of fun, very illustrative, tattooed guys and crazy things going on. There's a transparent necked duck or something with an arrow through it on this one. I mean, just crazy stuff. Two things I like about this can is that the it feels good. It's like it kind of feels powder coated.
It's
or
got
something.
The it's got like a matte sleeve.
Yeah,
on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not. Yeah,
it's got not the gloss.
It's got the shrink wrap sleeve going on. So it's kind of a slick feel to it. Which I guess the more you drink of them, the better chance you have your beer slipping through the hands. Where you're like, oh, there it goes. But it's a good looking. And there's a lot of. I mean, we're doing it now, and a lot of breweries are doing this thing where they're just buying the blank cans and
by
doing
we,
the sleeves.
Keith means Service Brewing Company, where Keith works. If it's your first time joining the show, right.
So it's one of those things where you know it's becoming a more popular option. Gives you more flexibility to produce as much or as little of whatever product you want in cans. So it looks good. It's a good looking can, nice kind of green color on it. Everything's big and bold and easy to read.
You're not going to confuse it for a different beer.
No.
Oh, absolutely not. No.
It really does
stand out.
Yeah.
And you've got it poured in some glasses too.
Oh, can we talk about the shade they throw in this one?
Oh, why not?
Sure.
So here's the read on this. This beer is not candy or mother's milk. It is not brewed by gypsies or aliens, nor does it contain any zombie dirt. This is a double IPA brewed with Citra hops. It is sticky, hoppy, and delicious. Simply drink it and enjoy it. Don't hoard this beer. Sit your ass down and drink it now.
All right.
So do we need to go through and just like...
Yeah, I was trying to get there. Obviously, the zombie dirt is pretty easy. That's three Floyds. Let's see. Zombie gypsies. Dust. I don't know what that's...
Well, I guess there's so many gypsy
candy,
brewers.
Mother's milk? Maybe.
Mother's milk, there's dragons. Well, that's a completely different style of beer.
Yeah, that's a stout.
Yeah. I don't know.
Doesn't matter.
It's funny.
Yeah.
It's in glasses.
Yep.
It's not a stout.
Nope.
No.
Tell us what it looks like, please.
You know what? This is a nice kind of cloudy orangey yellow color to it. Coats the glass really nicely. Again, poured with the head and faded pretty fast, but it left a nice lacing. Just a nice looking double IPA.
Yeah,
it is. Yep. The nose, Keith, what do you get in the aroma of this one?
Obviously, it's Citra hops. I'm getting some citrus, but I'm also getting a lot of pine. I'm kind of, I mean, maybe that's an element of Citra that I don't know. It actually kind of reminds me a little more of Mosaic, which has a citrus, but it has also kind of like an earthy pine thing. But in any case, it's clearly brewed with Citra. That's the whole point. I think it smells really nice. We're drinking this, let's see, first week in March, and it has on the bottom what I'm going to guess is a Best Buy date. It says 12/01/18. So I'm not sure what that means. Why? I don't know if that was a misprint. If it's supposed to say 17, and
or
that
their
was the
coding may
date.
Mean something else,
right? Well, I mean, it's 12/01/18, yeah, and then underneath that it says, you know, has some letters, either an A and an L, an F and an L, and a pound sign or hashtag, depending on how old you are. 189. So. I don't know if that's a misprint on the date. So if we want to assume that it was either packaged on that and they're giving it a 1 year Best Buy automatically, I'm going to guess it was packaged on the 1st of December of last year or, you know, and maybe there was a mix up there. Obviously, it wasn't brewed in the future. So it's kind of hard to say how maybe old this can is. So some of that maybe the aroma on the hops is could have to do with a little bit of age. If we're talking about a beer that's a little over 3 months old, some of that kind of citrus and some of that bright aroma is going to fade a little bit after 3 months. It's not going to be a huge loss, but it's going to start to fade.
Well, that little bit of earthiness on the aroma I got too, and was a surprise. Overall, it is very bright, does have that citrus quality, a little bit of that pine, but there's that little bit of an earthiness too, which I did find rather interesting.
Yeah.
The ABV on this one is a little over 8%. Is that right? Like
8.2.
So a big double IPA. And let's just jump into the taste here. Mm-hmm. A lot of good things to talk about in terms of the taste of this beer. This is a beer that all three of us have had the chance to have before, are happy to have it again, yep. And to talk about it. What stands out for you, Raymond, taste-wise?
It's all citrus to me. It's just very tropical and fruity to mm-hmm. me.
Yeah,
I get a lot of like kind of almost like candy malt. The malt bill, typically, you know, you see a lot of either kind of biscuity or crackery malt in yes. IPAs. Yes. Kind of get one or the other. This one it almost has like a Belgian candy sugar sweetness to it, which is kind of interesting. Very very sweet kind of candy malt, but I'm not getting it's not necessarily caramel or biscuit or anything like that. And yes, a lot of citrus, a lot of kind of piney, resinous kind of bitterness on the end, but it's really nice. It's got a nice balance, nice ride from, you know, malt sweetness right through your hop flavor into your bitterness, which is, you know, really the kind of perfect flavor ride you want on an IPA.
Yeah, for me, it's almost if there was such a thing like a candied grapefruit, especially there towards the end. You know, at first I'm thinking all this pineapple, but there really is the sourness or the tartness toward the yep. end of it that I read more as grapefruit, which so it's more of the sweet up front, and then it kind of gets
yeah,
a little bit more
bitter.
Yeah,
I get that kind
bitter.
Of grapefruit rind, that kind of the more the pith and rind as opposed to the... you know, the kind of sweet aromatic peel or the bitter fruit or the, you know, tart fruit. But yeah, I get that.
It's just stinking tasty.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of wish I had all 16 ounces right of that now. Just pop the can and start drinking.
Now, it says drink from the can.
Does
have
it?
You done
well,
that? Yeah.
All right. Well, sorry. We apologize. We've done
Oops.
Wrong.
I still don't understand that.
I drink from cans all the time. It's just laziness, I think. But if it's a beer I haven't had before, mm-hmm. I would not go buy a six pack of a beer I've never tried before and not pour the first one into a glass and sort of put it through its paces a little bit. I'll pop the top on a can and start drinking all the time.
For me, it's not really about the flavor so much. I mean, in a way it is because once it's in a glass, I get more of the aroma because of how the glass is shaped.
I know it's the right way to do it. I'm just lazy about it.
And I do drink from the can sometimes. But the biggest thing for me, if it's can, is 100% convenience. Maybe I don't have a good glass around or I'm just drinking while I'm doing something else. But for me, being able to let it breathe, letting some of that extra carbonation get out, it just, for me, I drink it slower and I enjoy it more. When it's a can, I kind of tend to crush it. Yep. I drink a little too fast, get a lot of the gas buildup in my tum-tum. Baby has to take a tum-tums for his tum-tums.
Poor Lee.
But I sometimes you just end up drinking it from the can. You're at the beach. I'm drinking it from the can.
I'll come home and just be like, end of the day, I just want a beer, and I will find the beer I have to think about the least, and I will enjoy it from the can as little as possible. But what if I'm actually sitting down to really enjoy a beer? Yeah, pouring it into a glass is where it's at.
When we are not drinking great beers like Sit Your Ass Down from Against the Grain, we sometimes try to make our own. My homebrewing exploits are trains just rolling down that track. So at this point, the batch I did with the Hopsteiner Experimental and Lemon Drop is all bottled up. That's been bottled at the time of this recording for about a week. It's got another week to go to finish its bottle carbonation, and it'll be ready to drink. So
great. So next time podcast. We get together, we'll be drinking some homebrew.
Yeah. Nice. The process was overall pretty good, and I'm going to be writing up some longer form thoughts about using the catalyst fermenting system to brew in. I had some definite positives. I do love the idea of having a single vessel to go from primary to bottling in. Mm-hmm. That being said, I didn't do that. I did end up racking to a separate container for prior to bottling. I did primary and secondary in the catalyst, but there was a good amount of sediment that collected around the bottom of the conical fermenter. So the way it's shaped is like traditional brewing equipment. It's a cylinder, but then when it goes down, it forms a cone shape to, in this case, a butterfly valve where you can attach different attachments to. But even after taking off the yeast, we did, we've talked about this in podcasts before, but there's a 3-inch butterfly valve at the bottom, and it attaches, you can attach mason jars, and it comes with a 16-ounce mason jar, super handy. This is great for collecting your yeast if you want to harvest your own yeast and create your own yeast colonies. It's also just a nice way to get it clean for your secondary, so you're not having to rack to a second vessel. You're able to help the beer clarify there. I filled up by cleaning these out, I had two full 16-ounce mason jars just of the spent grains and the yeast in this. So that was a lot of that. But by the time I put in my third, it filled up almost all clear. So I was like, okay, well, this is good enough for my secondary. And I thought what was left on the sides would settle down into that mason jar during the final step. It didn't. It kind of stayed. And so I was a little gun-shy. I didn't want that extra bit. I couldn't tell how thick it was. I didn't want the action of bottling to loosen it up. Now we're having a vortex of liquid coming down and to get into my bottle. So I racked into a bottling bucket and then filled from there. But once it was all done, I started cleaning it out. The stuff never moved. It stayed. It stayed in position pretty well. And it was super thin. It was really just almost like a trick of the eye, like where it was like just a film around it. So it probably would have been just fine.
Yeah, I think you would have been fine. Once you get going, I mean, I know from personal experience at the brewery that, we'll have to get, some, especially coming out of a Bright, which has got a flat bottom, we'll have to get, the initial bit of yeast off of the Bright, anything that's settled out. But, eventually you just start pushing through it. It almost like makes a, like you said, a vortex cone through, Then when you get closer to the bottom and there's less weight, it'll have more ability to pull it out. And you would just be using gravity, so you would have no way to push that down, like with, you know, like CO2 or something to push to make it go faster, kind of thing. But you probably would have been fine once you kind of dropped all that yeast off of the bottom of there. You probably would have been just fine.
But as someone who has traditionally gone from, you know, a regular carboy, you know, with a flat bottom and racking from primary to secondary, secondary to bottling, it's amazing really how much volume you lose to the yeast and to the spent grains when you're looking at it. Because, you know, once I racked over, or I could even see in the primary, once I was changing out those mason jars, you know, you start out at a full 5 gallon volume. And you're down to less than 4.5 by the time it's all going over to bottling bucket easy. And, you know, you kind of know that in your brain anyway. But when you're sitting there and you keep it in the same vessel this whole time and you just see it keep going down as you keep pulling the mason jars out, it's pretty interesting. I decided not to keep the yeast on this first batch, and I need to build up a supply of mason jars because I realized I only had the one mason jar, so I couldn't really just keep that yeast. But it's, you know, the whole process overall seemed to make a lot of sense. And especially if you're someone just getting into the hobby, maybe you don't have a lot of kit, don't have a lot of space. Having a single vessel you can do all this in makes a lot of sense.
So the connection on the bottom of that butterfly valve is designed for like a screw top mason jar. It's that size. So, all right. I was just going to say you might be able to find some kind of hose with a attachment that would fit that. And then you wouldn't have to keep replacing the jar, just have a longer hose that goes into a larger vessel that you could do. You might have to modify something or build it yourself, but you could probably engineer like a longer tube of some kind that you can sanitarily collect your yeast into a larger vessel and then put that in the fridge until the next time.
Well, they also make larger mason jars. So they made like 24 ounce mason jars for God's sake. So there was that I definitely did find, and they do have, you know, the bottling attachment has a, you know, it's a small hose. Like it's not big. It's the standard 1/8 inch tubing.
Right.
You wouldn't use that to get your yeast out. That would be a slow, horrible mess. but yeah, I'm excited to try it again. I think that I learned a lot from this batch with it, but overall it was a super easy experience. Cleanup was a breeze. Yep. You know, even having some large mouth fermenters in the past with this, because the bottom valve is 3 inches, so you have a 3 inch hole in the bottom once that's taken off. The top is like a bucket. It's like just, you know, a foot in diameter. You can get right up in there, clean it super easily. It took no time to clean this out. A lot of the pieces, including the actual fermenter itself, are dishwasher safe. Just throw it in and go. So,
cool.
You know, and if you're lucky enough to have a dishwasher that does a sanitizing cycle, that's always great. Yeah. I'm a big fan of having it all right there, especially with my bottles on bottling day.
Is that something that you personally have?
Yeah.
So did you utilize that before you started brewing?
Oh, well, everything's always sanitized before.
You could run all the parts through an empty, clean dishwasher with just the sani cycle and pull them out and, you know, and you can, I'm sure you can, I don't know how much they cost, but they're probably get pretty simple, like test strips to, you know, test them and say, all right, we're good. And then go right into brewing. But
yeah, I didn't for this because I did have a batch of sani already mixed up.
Right.
So I just did my spray out and it was good. And it was no hassle for those handful of pieces you had to have sanitized for brew day. And there are a couple of extra things like having your hydrometer and things like that sanitized, or, well, yes, your hydrometer you don't because that's in your test bottle. But there were a couple of things that were definitely not dishwasher safe. So I wanted to have some sani mixed up anyway. So it wasn't that big of a deal. But I do love it. Like I said, you know, wash the bottles out really well and then just throw them in the sanitizing cycle. Mm. And then they're right there ready to go when you're doing your bottling. Just grab them as I'm motioning right here to everybody. Everybody in podcast land can see me reaching into the dishwasher.
It seems like a very smooth process. By his motion.
Yeah, exactly. So that's going, and I'm excited to try that. The little bit I tried on bottling day was actually, you know, I think it was pretty much what I was expecting. So it was, you know, still sweet, but super hoppy, super bright. So I'm excited to see what the carbonation brings to it. My beer room is a little bit on the chilly side. It's starting to have a little bit of a cold snap all of a sudden. So I need to make sure they stay warm enough so that the carbonation finishes over the next couple of days. But people who live in snow states right now are laughing.
It's so chilly.
You got to bring your bottles inside, dear man. You keep them like outside. Raymond, your brewing is still in progress, waiting for other stuff to happen, right? Yeah, still on the back burner for now. But I wanted to check and make sure I wasn't missing anything. We're still there.
Yep, still waiting.
All right.
But getting closer.
Good. Like to hear that. Well, we're not drinking. We're not brewing. We're running. I'm running. Is anybody else running?
I'm running a little.
Okay, good. Let's talk about that. How's your running going, Raymond?
Woo.
It's been sporadic lately, I'll admit. I've had a...
Oh, that was great. Okay.
No. I've had a little bit of ankle pain, actually. Or, I'm sorry, heel pain. So I've kind of limited things to trail runs as much as possible. Staying off the concrete and the asphalt. It's a lot more comfortable that way. But we don't have access to trails as much around here as I would like. It hasn't been as regular.
Police Memorial, like which ones are you running for people who are in Savannah or in this area?
I've been reserving things. We have a really nice trail down at, where I work.
Oh yeah.
So most of my running has actually been in Florida these days.
Oh, good. Good. Well, it's nice to get out and do that. I like trail running a lot too. I mean, I just like being in nature and all that, but it is, I do feel like it's probably healthier. That repetitive stress of ankles and knees, men of a certain age, it loses its luster and appeal. That's something that our buddy Craig Simpson knows a lot about. Craig's out there still training for his Ohio Buck 50 race. He's keeping us updated on Twitter and Instagram with what's going on. That's that big old relay race that he's getting ready for. That's happening April 7th. If you want to follow along with the rest of Craig's training, you can follow him on Twitter at CRSIMP01. And speaking of listener feedback, I want to say congratulations to our friend Missy, and might as well her husband Alan too. You guys know Alan from a couple episodes of the podcast, but they both completed their first marathons recently.
Congratulations.
Yeah, that's a big Excellent. Deal. And Missy let it slip that she did all of her training runs while listening to this podcast.
Oh, well.
Which is kind of sweet.
She didn't give up running and beer. Amazing.
I know, right? She didn't quit either one. And part of me was like, I realized, you know, you're out there for a long time. I'm like, oh God, you're listening to more than one in a row. Oh God, how many did you listen to? You didn't like go back, did you? So anyway, there was that, which is kind of concerning, you guys. Hey Raymond, do you have a book for us?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, great.
And what about reading? There's a leisure time activity that will help you learn things you'd like to know about many subjects.
Raymond's Book Corner.
It's the time for the show where we go to Raymond to find out about a book that no one actually wants to read, so why not have someone else read it to you? That's right. If you go to audibletrial.com/brewdrinkrun, you can get a free trial from Audible of any of their audiobooks, and maybe the one that Raymond will talk about will be available. Raymond, what's your pick this week?
This week is a book called Darwin's Ghost by Rebecca Stott.
How many books that have to do with Darwin do you think we've talked about on this podcast?
I have no idea.
Probably a lot. All right. So why should we, other than the fact that this is free, a lovely free book from audibletrial.com/brewdrinkrun, why should someone choose this for their free book?
Well, as the intro states, it covers a lot of territory. This is a book. You're giving me the side eye now.
It's a book, period. Yep. I agree.
So apparently in the first edition of Origin of Species by Charles Darwin, he left out who his influences were. So somebody called him out on it. So he created this whole long list of scientists and people who had been his predecessors in the development of the Origin of Species. And so this book is research about each one of those people. And it's kind of interesting. It covers a lot of territory there. You know, it starts with Aristotle and goes all the way up into his contemporaries. And, there's a lot of interesting personalities in there.
And the narrator, is this one that you've been reading or listening to?
Listening to.
And you like the narrator?
Yeah.
Good stuff. All right. There you go. Well, thanks to Raymond. Thanks to Raymond's Book Corner. Thanks to Audible. Go to audibletrial.com/brewdrinkrun. You can get a free download, one of their books. Why not? It could be that one. It could be other ones. Who knows? If you like real books, go to brewdrinkrun.com. Go to this episode's show notes and click on the link to buy a real copy of the book from Amazon or your Kindle, or maybe find a used copy for some weird old musty bookstore in California. It'll come to your house in a couple of days. It'll totally be worth it. We'll be right back. And Keith just showed that bottle who was boss.
Take that.
Well, Keith was kind enough to go and get a bottle for our grand tasting. While he talks about that, I'm going to go and rinse my glass out.
All right. Thanks, Lee. What we got here is some duty. It's either duty, doty, or do die. I'm not really sure exactly.
I'm going doty.
Doty? All right. I like do die. Actually, I like duty pretty much. So I like duty. There, I said it. So what we have here is a beer from the brewery. This is the 2016 edition of an 11.7% beer, aged in bourbon barrels with grape must, cherries, orange zest, and spices. They also got Hotsy Totsy written on there. So if you enjoy Manhattan, this is the beer for you. Basically, that's what they're trying to accomplish here, is the idea of a Manhattan. So
I like Manhattan, so yeah. I'm excited.
Yeah, this is something that I've actually had before. A couple of episodes ago with Andrew, we had a beer from my boss's Rare Beer Club, and this is another one that came from that. So he's joined up that club, and he'll basically offer up a bottle or two every so often. So the people in the brewery can get to try some different things and some things that you wouldn't normally get to try. So great guy. Great to have more exciting beers to try. It says on the bottle that this is inspired by a classic New York concoction and shares a nickname with Grandma Rue, who was keen on the ritzy drink. So,
oh, Grandma Rue.
So there you go. So here we have it. Let's get this poured out for y'all. It doesn't say that this is part of like the Reserve Society or anything like that. So as a rare beer, there's no indication, at least on the label, that this is one of the breweries, you know, you got to be a member to get kind of thing, or preservation. There's a bunch of different levels that you can join with them to get beers that are generally not available to anyone else. But this isn't something that I've ever seen on our shelves either. So I'm not sure how limited this is, but it's definitely limited to us. So.
Wow. So I just smelled this beer. I'm going to skip ahead real quick.
Yeah.
Ooh. Oh, boy.
Wow.
Yeah, it smells pretty special.
I mean, I've never really had Manhattans. I'm not a mixed drink guy. I'm not a go out for cocktails. You know, I mean, I guess I could probably be talked into going to the new bar that's, you know, a faux speakeasy and drinking these kinds of things. So I'm at a bit of a disadvantage when it comes to this kind of thing. We actually at service did a beer inspired by a Manhattan, and I was a little bit at a disservice then. People who know those beers a little bit more were like, oh yeah, this is great, and they really liked it. Our sales rep at the time made up a kind of cherry spice concoction, and then we added that in, I think we added that in the secondary. You might have added it in the boil, I can't remember. It was a small batch thing we did, kind of just a one-off, did it for fun. And so it was really exciting to see this. And we tried some at the brewery, and I really enjoyed it. And I thought that you guys might like to try it as well. So that's why I kind of held on to this after bringing home a bottle.
I mean, the aroma is like cherry and cola and whiskey. And there's a cleanness to it as well. I mean, it's...
Or a sweetness.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which I guess I was kind of attributing to that cola kind of piece of it. Mm-hmm. But the cherry part of the aroma is so good and so specific because it smells like real cherry juice. Like it smells authentic. Like it smells like the real deal. And there's something just very comforting about the aroma on this too. There's a real, I don't know, tactile piece of this that reminds me in a lot of ways of some of the, like the Funky Buddha beers that we drink that are like, this is a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. You're like, oh, I can smell the bread.
All right. So let me just say, does this, as someone who's never had a Manhattan, or if I have had a Manhattan, it was in a haze of not remembering having a Manhattan. Does this smell like the cocktail, or is it smell kind of like the cocktail? Is pretty good for a beer. It's excellent. I mean, how would you rate it?
To me, yes, except for this, caramelly part of it. That's maybe a little bit more on the cloying side than, but it probably depends on what whiskey it's made with. Mm-hmm. You know, like that could make a big difference. But yeah, Raymond, what do you think?
Oh, I'm with Keith. I think if I've ever had a Manhattan, it was after about six or seven other drinks when I went, give me that fancy thing over there. And
it was my drink for a long in the pre-beer drinking.
At least one of us has a frame of reference for this thing.
Yeah. I mean, I don't order them anymore because chances are there's something on draft I haven't had and I'm ordering that. So I don't have a lot of recent sensory information on it, but I should have enough stored back there in the old dead brain cells to pull it back up.
As the aroma of a beer and what it says is supposed to be in this, I totally get all of it. You know, I get the cherries. There is kind of a musty grape kind of aroma going on in it. You know, the orange is there, and it's definitely got a spiciness to it. So, from at least what it's advertised as, literally, and not using the word Manhattan, I think that they have a lot of that in there.
I want to talk about the color in this because I want to get Raymond a chance to talk about a grand tasting beer that's not an imperial stout really quick. So this is in the glass. Appearance wise, Raymond, how would you describe this?
This one's a little hard. It's kind of a this kind of dirty purplish brown, very cloudy. I almost wanted to say, when I first looked at it, I almost thought about like prune juice, but it's not quite that purpley. It's still got that.
Do you want to know what it looks like to me? Urban Artifact Slide Rule, beer we just had a couple of weeks ago.
I thought
ago.
You were going to say Duty, so thank you for not doing that.
No, I mean, just a couple of weeks ago, we had that beer. It was a chocolate raspberry something Goza. And we were all kind of going, wow, I've never seen a beer quite like this. And it was kind of this purplish brown, kind of murky, cloudy color. And lo and behold, a couple of weeks later, we open up a beer that kind of has a similar appearance.
This to me, I get the purple more when it's like sitting on the table. If I look at it through the light, I get more of the brown. But to me, it doesn't look that much different than a lot of the old ales or blends that we've had. It just is, it's cloudy and it is this kind of, it's not just brown. There is some reds and that kind of violet that comes through as well. It's not what I don't think any of us would describe as being a pretty beer, but this is what you get when you do this.
This is
what these beers are going to look like. The flavor for me is interesting. I feel like there are things that I like and there are things that I don't like as much. I get a little bit of a, on the first sip, I've only had one. I'm kind of just first reaction. I get one of those jaw tinges like I get in a sour, which is, I'm not saying this is sour. I'm going to keep drinking it and I'm sure it won't be there next time. But on that first sip, just where my palate was beforehand, I got one of those tightenings in my jaw, just kind of a little bit of a shock reaction. And in addition to the cherry and that caramel flavor that I definitely got on the aroma, I also got coconut. Again, a flavor that I don't particularly love. So I'm going to let you guys talk while I go back to this and have a couple of other sips.
See, I don't get coconut. I definitely get that kind of grape must, and it's very kind of that really must. I mean, it's like that kind of almost moldy, mildewy basement, you know, kind of that taste you get when you're in a damp basement, you know, it kind of gets you everywhere. And you know, and the spices come out really big, and the cherries to me. I feel like the bourbon barrel itself is mild. There's a subtle behind the scenes kind of whiskey thing going on, but you know, especially from the brewery, for a bourbon barrel aged beer, it's not kind of in your face. I was kind of expecting that to be a little bit more of a major player. I think as it warms up, that might come out a little bit more. Raymond, what are you getting in this?
I get that cherry to start off, and I get that musty flavor, and the oakiness comes through as kind of a tannin for me.
Yeah, I get a little bit of that. Mm-hmm.
But I've been interpreting this, I think, and I get the coconut and I get the mustiness, but I keep interpreting that as that cola flavor to me. So it's I get those distinct flavors, but when they mush together, it just becomes very cola-like.
What do you think about the carbonation on this beer? You know, I think that you could have gone a couple of different ways with this.
I think if you're trying to go cocktail, I think it's fine. Does Manhattan have does it have cola in it? Okay, so it's not supposed to. I mean, so it's a beer, so it's got to be carbonated, but I don't think it's like bright or super bubbly, which makes sense for a beer that's supposed to emulate a cocktail. You maybe don't want it to have a huge amount of carbonation to it. I'm quite pleased with generally this beer. I think it's really kind of interesting and tasty, and I like it, and I like the kind of spices and the fruitiness to it, and the kind of little notes of the bourbon barrel. So I'm not trying to place it as anything that else, because I don't know what to place it as, not knowing what I'm trying to make it, to what kind of box I'm trying to stick it into.
Well, so, honestly, I feel like marketing this as a Manhattan style beer or is almost a disservice to the beer, because I think that for me, I keep trying to compare it and not just drink the beer unless, because this beer is honestly much more complex mm-hmm. than any Manhattan I've had. Right. You know, a Manhattan is really like, you know, whiskey and cherry juice and a little bit of something to cut it. And that's really a traditional Manhattan, and you can do other things. You can, you know, make them fancier. And this is definitely with that, with the spicy notes, yeah, with the kind of peppery spice notes, with the orange, with the must. This is much more complicated than your neighborhood bar is going to make your Manhattan mm-hmm. for you. So I feel like there's a lot more going on here. And in my brain, if I'm trying to say, oh, well, the Manhattan does this and this does that, this is just much more complicated than that. So I don't think that's really fair at all. I do like it. That sour twinge completely went away on the second sip. So it really just kind of was where I was coming to this beer from. The coconut has greatly diminished. I still get a little bit of it, but it's not a deal breaker for me in any way. But it is this kind of blend that makes it this really sweet cherry old ale that I find to be really interesting about this beer, especially how the spiciness comes out. Well, the spicy.
Well, I mean, I was just reading the back, so they got some more kind of fine print stuff, and so I can read this real quick. So let's see. Manhattan cocktail from the grain, rye, wheat, and barley, bourbon barrel-aged character, and blend of 20-plus spices and grape must for a bitter-esque and vermouth-like notes. Fancy a garnish, cherries and orange zest come out as your kisser hits the glass. So they obviously put a lot into this, and when you say it's more complex than, you know, maybe that's kind of where that's coming from.
Well, they are referencing things like bitter. So, I mean, they're probably going for a much more kind of upscale, retro, speakeasy kind of, right. Mm-hmm. You know, and whereas I'm just saddling up to the bar and I'm like, give me Manhattan, because I don't just want whiskey in a glass.
Right. <yeah.
laughs> That's what they're giving me. But yeah, this definitely, I'm guessing this is more, maybe a more upscale Manhattan would have some of these flavors. Do you guys want to hear what, like, an actual beer expert has to say about this beer? Probably not.
Wait, we're not?
Yeah, right.
To beer or not to beer? It's time for Beer Review Theater.
It's Beer Review Theater, where we turn to the real experts about beer, the internet, and find out what we need to really know about Doty and how this beer really tastes, despite what our tongues may be telling us. Doty. I'm going to go to the Microbrewed Beer of the Month Club. I'm going to go to what the guys over there have to say about this. You can learn more about this at beermonthclub.com.
There's no way you're going to read the whole thing, right? Because they have epic descriptions.
Oh, you don't want to hear it all?
Well, buckle in, folks. They have quite the epic descriptions.
Have epic descriptions, and it's a little hard to decide where to start, really. I mean, the first paragraph is what you already read off the bottle, so we're good there. I don't have to do that. So maybe I'll do the first paragraph. I won't talk about how it looks. I'll just kind of give the outset, the finish, and then like a little bit of their conclusion. So if you want to read more,
this is the abridged version.
Go to beermonthclub.com. You can read this all there. We enjoy any number of less sweet cocktails around these parts, but the Manhattan, without a doubt, is on regular rotation. Bourbon-y notes go beautifully alongside a well-placed cherry. Here, Doty hits a lot of our favorite notes from a great Manhattan.
Doty.
Complex bourbon and subtle barrel elements, rounded cherry notes that don't overstep, and that burst of a bright, juicy, but bitter citrus note from the orange zest. Both the latter benefit from those grape must elements in the background, adding a sort of Concord grape slant with the other fruit. Raymond left. I guess so he could listen to this on the podcast.
He's done. That's it. All right.
I'll skip ahead. The brewery is especially good at finishing their high ABV concoctions, sticking the landing, so to speak. For Doty, there's a perfectly tuned, slightly prickly degree of carbonation that's a perfect match for the heft of this beer. Tiny, tiny bubbles illuminating the surface of a very dense, bourbon-minded, hefty core. This beer just feels excellent on the tongue overall. The opposite of top-heavy, this gains a lot in its liftoff, courtesy of the vibrant orange zest along with Plush's cherries. If we wanted a Manhattan, but we didn't have a Manhattan, but we still really, really wanted a Manhattan, this would scratch that existential itch. I should just stop there.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good ending.
Yeah.
All right, good. The experts think this really tastes like a Manhattan.
I will defer to them because they've obviously had much fancier Manhattans than I have had how cheap can I get that for?
Yeah. the spice notes are really coming out as this thing's warming up, and so the aroma is kind of just becoming more complex and just, you know, kind of spice rack spicy, which is not necessarily a bad thing.
But it's like, just indiscriminate. Like the way it's working. You know, it's not like...
There we go. Would you like to pour your... Raymond was going to get Lee a martini glass, so let's go ahead and get this thing in its proper glassware.
Which you do not drink.
Oh, he was getting another one, too. Three of them. Oh, this is fantastic.
Which you don't drink.
This is what it says
to drink. Do you have any maraschino cherries? Okay.
Well, again, it's drinking Manhattans at places I don't go.
It says drink out of a nibble. It says nibble it.
A nibble glass.
How many? I have to rename this episode now. drink out of a nibble glass.
Drink duty out of a nibble glass? Is that
what you mean? Did you say nibble glass or nipple glass?
No. It says to... Oh, God, I can't see anymore.
I mean, nipple glass is obviously funnier, but nibble glass has
nibble
its own little...
Nibble one at 55 degrees Fahrenheit in a cocktail glass.
Okay, all right. All right, well, that's what I'm going to do. Sorry, I apologize. Clearly, this will enhance everything.
I feel like it needs some garnish now. Like, I should have toasted the rim and some sort of...
Do you have any, like, already curled pink orange peel to put around the edge?
And have a little...
Sorry, I'm a beer drinker. My bar is not stocked like that.
I need a little plastic sword in it with, like, some sort of a fruit.
Some cherries, maybe, in there.
The cherry is pretty
this
common.
This looks so fancy now.
It looks way better in this glass.
We got to get a good picture of this.
Oh, boy.
Things have changed.
Everybody listen while we take photos of the
Okay, so Raymond the right beer now, and a martini he's glass. Locking in on the martini glass.
He's focusing
and
with
the
his
bottle
camera.
Of duty. And he's done. Okay. I'm gonna find.
Have you tried
place.
It out of the glass?
No, I haven't tried it out of the glass. I'm too busy trying to hold this show together, and I'm doing a horrible job of it. What do you think? Is it better out of the martini glass?
No, there's no difference.
There's no difference. It's still good, right? It doesn't make it worse.
But it's kind of fun to, you know. I pulled out these glasses. I think in. The 18 years I've been married to my wife, we've used them like twice, so this is great.
Will someone please put this on Instagram and tag it as proper glassware? That would really just make my night. Absolutely. Okay, good. I will regram that. Go to Instagram.com/brewdrinkrun or just look up Brew Drink Run on your Instagram app and see a picture of this beer in a martini glass. It'll be so worth it because we're dedicating the last 5 minutes of the show to it. As it's warmed up, Keith was mentioning the spices.
I've gotten the picture, folks. I have gotten the picture. Yeah. Just an update.
The spices are starting to come out. And I agree, that kind of, you know, the spice drawer kind of way to describe this. Because it's not cinnamon. It's not allspice.
Exactly,
it's
yeah.
not
there's, star there's anise. A lot, there's a lot of different spices going on here. And they're starting to really come out in the aroma. Mm-hmm. And I like this the first time I had it, and I think that it was generally the consensus in the group that we were all like, wow, this is really cool. And I'm enjoying it this time around too.
It's super interesting, and bless the brewery for the hard work they do. They're doing the Lord's work over there in California. Indeed. Making really interesting beer.
They're not in California.
Are they? Do you want to fight?
No, very I don't want to fight.
They're in Orange County.
Do you want to know where they are?
They're in the OC.
Yeah. would you like to look at the bottle and just say that? I mean, we've already said duty how many times? Go ahead and say the name of the place that they're from.
Orange County, California.
Yeah.
It says it right there on the label, doesn't it?
Yeah, down at the bottom. There,
I really need to read
all the way down.
See, this is what I get for listening to books all the time. I can't read anymore.
Surprising, this is a short episode, you guys. Doty, if you can find Doty, if you have to join the Beer Doody. Of the Month Club to get it, whatever, what are you going to do to get some Doty?
Doody.
Go get some Doody, and you're going to make me say it. It's super interesting. I love these blends, or I love these beers that really kind of don't taste like a beer.
You love a good Doody blend.
Okay. For more about us and Brew Drink Run, go to brewdrinkrun.com. Follow us on Twitter. They're still laughing hard. Their faces are red. At Brew Drink Run on Instagram, at Brew Drink Run on Facebook, at facebook.com/brewdrinkrun to get those daily beer reviews. Plus, we're all on Untappd. If you want to be a part of the show, email us at team@brewdrinkrun.com. Update us on your homebrew, your running training, or your favorite place to grab a beer. You can also call us at 781-76-DRINK, 781-763-7465. We've got Brew Drink Run t-shirts and technical running shirts available on our website. Click on the store link. Just to spite you, I'm not going to rename this episode again. Our theme music is provided by Morning Lights. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you around the duty. Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers, don't want to mess up these fancy glasses. I hope you're proud of yourself.
Can't tell races to die.
That was worth it. Just want to all be on the same page about that. I got nothing for quoting a Billy Joel song at the beginning of this episode, but you can do that. It's fair.